WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, AJ Myers. Alongside Griffin Bloomstein, it is fully crossover season, and we got a lot to unpack. Syracuse men's basketball gets annihilated by Duke. The women's basketball team, meanwhile, is really just dusting off where they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. They're playing that well at the moment. And then lacrosse season is in full swing, and both the men's and women's teams have front-loaded their schedules, and it's gotten some really thrilling early season lacrosse. Women's team couldn't quite get it done, but there's some good signs there. And then the men's team getting a big win over Maryland. Griffin, we finally had a warm-up over the weekend. It got pretty nice. It was pretty warm yesterday, but as I always say, if it isn't snowing in Syracuse, it's probably raining.
Yep, it's currently raining right now.
Yep.
Which is better than snow. But 40 degrees, wow.
Yeah.
Can we just acknowledge greatness?
That felt wonderful.
It might have been the happiest I've been in a while, weather-wise, I'll say. as we got some warm weather and snow is starting to melt. Now I know we're going to probably get I'm just looking at the weather and we're going to get more snow this weekend. Throw it all out the window. Nothing else matters. Those were a couple of good days, I'll say. I wish the sun got out a little more so that the snow was melted and then we had a day without the snow. But now beggars can't be choosers.
No, they cannot. And for Syracuse men's basketball, they had a wild one last week against Cal with the power outages and everything. It was snowing that night. And they get an impressive win over SMU, an SMU team that many people think they're in the tournament. So it was like, oh, like, hello, big wins here. And there were some bracketologists who said, you know, don't look now, but Syracuse, if they get a result against Duke, you know, they're, first four out or next four out team. And it was like, oh, you know, is the season back on? And then they get smacked by Duke. Absolutely demolished, 101-64. It's the first time Syracuse has had two 30-point losses since the 1961-1962 season. So that's really bad. You know, there's no way around that. This was ugly, Griffin. I mean, in my 4 years, I mean, I know the UNC loss. I think that was 2 years ago. Maybe it was last year.
It was last year.
I was like, that was ugly. This was even worse. Now, credit, Duke is a really good team. Like, they are that good. Their defense is the best defense I've seen all season. It was just swarming defense. And, you know, it was defense that, like, Syracuse, it was like, oh, model off of this. You know, that's level five. That was level five the whole game, if you want to talk Adrian Autry. But there was just no match. And the funny thing is, they were in the game in the first half. I thought they started really well. They had it within three. You know, Nate Kings looked like he was due for another really good game. And then the offense just got really bad. Turnovers started to pile up. They finished with 11 on the day. And the missed shots were just ugly. 10 of 27 from three. Only two free throws made. That's really bad. Outside of William Kyle, no one really had a good game. And I mean, look, of course, Adrian Autry is the fault here. You know, he's got to coach his team better in big spots like this and be competitive, because Duke went on a big run at the end of the first half, and then the second half they started with the big run and it was over. The second half was, you didn't need to listen to it or watch it or anything. And you know, I think yes, Adrian Autry takes the blame for the reason I just mentioned, but also the best players on this team too, like Donnie Freeman and JJ Starling combined for 18 points. Like, that's unacceptable. JJ Starling, 3 of 13. You got to play better in the biggest games of the year. And it's really been a story of their tenure is they haven't.
Yeah, it was a little rough. Duke went on a 12-3 run in that first half. Then Syracuse kind of clawed its way back. And then Duke went on like 11-0 or like a, I think they went on a 16-0 run.
They shot the lights out too.
I think, yeah, it was ridiculous. They went on like two really big runs in that first half. And once that happened, you're just like, okay, game over. Pack your bags, back to the bus to take you to the plane. And it's just disappointing. Like, this team is so talented. There's so much talent on this team. And it can't figure it out. JJ Starling wasn't on the floor most of the second half. Donnie Freeman played 21 minutes. Both of those guys looked like non-factors. When this team was playing its best basketball the past couple of games, it was with both of them off the floor. Even last game, when Kyan was on the floor against SMU, it was a Kyan, Nate Kings, Nate George,
And Adrian Autry didn't go
Kyle.
back to that for whatever reason. He didn't want to go
Not
back.
this game.
But I don't get
Nope.
that.
And what was really interesting is when Duke kind of went on that initial run, it was a Ibrahim Sowore, Sadiq White, Betsy, Kyan, and Nate George. Those were the five on the floor. You are never going to win a basketball game if you have four bench players and one starter on the floor at Duke in the early minutes of a game or the late minutes of a game, pretty much any time in the game. You cannot have four bench guys on the floor against Duke on the
You
road.
can't do these stupid hockey lines. I don't know why he's so obsessed with running a hockey line substitution pattern. Make no sense.
It doesn't.
Even if your best
This
players
is.
don't have the hot hand, which none of them did, other than William Kyle.
Yeah. And the thing with William Kyle,
He's so one-dimensional.
he got three rebounds and they were all in the offensive glass. And then those were the second chance points he got. When you have a guy like William Kyle who is good solely under the rim, and credit to him, he was fine offensively.
He plays his
Defensively,
heart
he had a
out. He
couple.
does, like, you could.
Yeah. And he had a couple of cool blocks. Like, he was fine. But the biggest thing that really got me was Duke was hustling. Duke was diving on the floor. They were showing fight, even if they were up by 20, even if the game was close. No matter the time, they were putting their body on the line and trying to get any other possession. There hasn't been that for Syracuse since Tennessee. There's been nothing. And not to get more somber on the pod, but this was like the fifth worst loss in program history. It was top five. That's a saying. That silence is a saying. And so, as the Adrian Autry era winds down and eventually comes to a close, it sticks. It sticks. Because Adrian Autry played for the team. He won with the team. He won as an assistant coach. And so the things he won't be remembered for were necessarily that. It will be the 3 years where he was supposed to take over for Bayheim and reverse the end of a bad couple of years that closed out the Bayheim era, but didn't happen.
No, it didn't. And we talked about Syracuse Athletic Director John Wildhack retiring on last episode. So be sure to listen to that for the full breakdown and our thoughts on John Wildhack's retirement. But he did say he's going to keep Adrian Autry to the end of the season. I don't have a huge problem with that, because at the end of the day, if you fire Autry now, you're just going to put in one of his assistants. And like, what difference is that going to make? So you might as well close out the season. And also, you saw what happened with Kansas State. Totally different situation to Syracuse, but they did fire their head coach, Jermaine Tang. But now they're in this big issue with a buyout and cause. I don't think Syracuse wants to deal with that. I think if you fire him at the end of the season, it's much, easier to buy out a contract and all the X's and O's things with that. So Autry sticks around. Other players, though, that's the question. I'm really curious what happens to Kai and Anthony now because, he didn't do a whole lot against Duke and he isn't having a great freshman year. I just hope he sticks around. I mean, for one, I hope he sticks around for a Syracuse standpoint to develop. I think Jay Williams brought this up on the ESPN broadcast. It is such a rush now for freshmen to get out of college and just go right to the league. Why not stay 2, 3 years to develop into a great player? You don't have to necessarily be one and done. Now it's just if he stays in Orange. And I think, Carmelo Anthony has said many times that, he loves Syracuse. He's proud that his son is here. Hopefully that's enough to keep him here, but I really don't know at this point, Griffin.
I think it will be. I think, Syracuse has to get this athletic director pronto, which means you have to get the chancellor even quicker. So expect a decision for the chancellor hopefully soon. If Syracuse wants to get a good basketball coach, if Syracuse wants to get a good athletic director. So, they got a chancellor first, then athletic director, then head coach. But you need to get that head coach by early April, late March. So if that's going to happen, you got to start working and working quick. The search for an athletic director is on. That there is a committee listed. But also, that the committee is Ian McIntyre, who's the soccer coach, Mike Tirico, who's calling the Olympics right now, so I'm not sure how involved he's going to be. Donovan McNabb's wife is on there. And
Great
a couple
people.
of other. Yeah, I mean, very smart. Everyone loves Ian McIntyre. Everyone loves Mike Tirico. The McNabs are up there with Syracuse royalty. And so the thing is, that needs to get done quick because this basketball team is going to have a new coach next year. And if Syracuse wants to do it, they're going to have to do it soon. So it'll be interesting how that all plays out. I think I. What was your original question? Because I kind of went on a
If
whole.
Kyan sticks around.
Oh, yes. I think he does because that's what I was trying to say. I think Carmelo should be involved somewhat with the team, whether that's in a quasi GM role. I think Syracuse should keep Alex Klein. I do. I think he did a good job.
It'll be
But
difficult, I think, with it, because I think him and Adrian Autry are very close.
yeah. But I mean, I also think that he did a good job.
He
And I
did.
think that Syracuse should try to keep him around. Will he stay? Who knows?
He brought in the
But
players. They just haven't been coached well enough.
I think Syracuse should try to keep Kyan. And Syracuse should go to
And
Mello and try to, hey, we would love your help and input and whatever. Because his name's on the building. The practice facility, that's the Mello Center. So you got to keep him around.
I agree with that. I feel like it's almost a must. He's the type of player where you have to make sure he, stays longer than his father did. Stay 3 years. Why not develop into a great player here at Syracuse? Of course, in order to develop into a great player, you need a great coach, which this program right now doesn't have, in Adrian Autry. Last one on the men's basketball team, because I want to get your opinion on it, because we've had this conversation a lot over the last 2 years with the NBA and lack of Syracuse representation there. Does Donnie Freeman even get drafted anymore at this point?
That's a good question. I mean, the way he's been playing the last month, no.
Yeah, and I think there's a
The
real concern
way.
with his injury history, too. I think that's going to scare off a lot of teams.
Yeah. I don't know how much that would scare off teams. It's not like he's been crazy injured last season, a little bit of this season. I think that what is the bigger point is do teams still see the potential, or all have been the issues this season kind of impacted that?
Does I mean I could see him maybe tra not putting his name in and transferring. I think maybe that's a potential.
I think it all depends on who the coach is.
Yeah.
I think Donnie will declare because I think Donnie is talented, and I think that if you put him around, like if you put him in the combine and if you do all the stuff, he will ask you. Like he or not, he will ask you, but he will perform well. And so it's interesting. I don't think that's the thing. Like I think that should be the fans thing least. The thing fans are caring about the least these days. Like,
Yeah.
okay, if Donnie goes the draft, sure. Donnie stays great. Does he get drafted? Who knows? And at this point, there's a lot of more important things to think about.
Yeah, priority one certainly will be that head coach. Season ain't over yet, and they will qualify for the ACC tournament. It's about impossible for them not to. So they're going to go to Charlotte, right? That's where the ACC tournament is once again this year. So Adrian Autry will be coaching for the rest of February and into March. And again, I mean, you could say a miracle run in the ACC tournament, but as we talked, and I forgot to mention that at the top, we got Tim Leonard here in a little bit. We just talked to him about the women's basketball team and men's lacrosse team. Love talking to Tim. Great insight as always, the voice of both of those programs. You know, we talked about it. No Syracuse basketball team likes playing in the ACC tournament for whatever reason. They never do well since joining the ACC way back in, what was it, 2012. But the women's basketball team did get a really impressive win over Clemson. It was a gutty, gritty win. Maybe didn't play their best brand of basketball, Griffin, but still, they found a way to win, and that's so important, especially for postseason ball.
And Clemson's a good team. They kept it close with Syracuse. It was Pink Day in the Dome, so there's a good crowd and turnout. The real answer for this one was, can Syracuse overcome a good defensive team? Clemson will create turnovers, not a whole lot, but the biggest thing is like they'll force bad shots. And Syracuse didn't really give up. They didn't shoot well. They shot 37% from the field and 33% from deep, but they still found a way to win. They went to the free throw line. Filia was 7 for 7. Burroughs had a great game. Didn't shoot a lot from beyond the arc, but got inside and was effective. And also had 16 rebounds, a career high. She had a career high in the first half, so pretty impressive. But then the thing is, like, he. When you have a team like Syracuse women's basketball, where, and Tim's going to allude to this, so I don't want to steal the whole spotlight, they've beat good teams. They haven't really beaten a great team. And so for them to continue to get good wins, that's impressive. And you play another good team on the road against NC State, that is in a couple of days, Saturday, Sunday, 22nd,
Sunday.
Sunday. And so when you play a good team like that on the road, if you can win that game, then things might look a little better. You might lock yourself into that double bye, and you could potentially get out of that 8-9 seed.
Yeah, and that's the goal right now is to navigate their way out of that spot. We'll get into that more with Tim Leonard. I was really impressed with Sophie Burrows. I remember at the start of the season, we were both talking about how she needs to be the consistent force and she needs to get on the right track. I think she really has towards the end of this stretch. An impressive double-double. So a really nice showing from Burroughs. NC State next on the docket in Raleigh, North Carolina. That's a good Wolfpack team. So another tough test awaiting Syracuse women's basketball. And then over to the lacrosse side, it was a thrilling Friday in the Dome. It started with women's lacrosse. And maybe let's start there. Let's go in chronological order. Women's lacrosse, they had a tough test for Reggie Thorpe. We've talked about it, how new head coach in Reggie Thorpe. This is not an easy start to the season with number 7 Maryland. And then you play the top team in the country. But Griffin, they went belt to belt with the top team in the country. Really impressive. Yeah, you didn't get the result you wanted, but you still played really well. And the struggles that they had against Maryland, it seemed like they fixed pretty well, especially with the shots on target. Against Maryland, they couldn't, or, yeah, against Maryland, they really couldn't get anything on target. But against North Carolina, it was a lot better in front of goal. And ultimately, you just lost to a really, really good team.
I mean, you had control of that first half
Yeah.
pretty much all 30 minutes. And that was the thing that impressed me. Your offense was clicking. The draw controls were not great, but they kept you in it in that first half where you could get possession. The defense was working really, really well. Chloe Humphrey wasn't necessarily taking over, and then the second half came. But Chloe Humphrey is such a talented player. So, I mean, the key for any team playing UNC is just control possession and don't let the ball touch your stick, because once it does, that offense is gonna do magic. Syracuse was in control. They were winning. It was nice to see Emma Muchnick get involved, Molly Guzik, who both didn't have tremendous games against Maryland. No one really had tremendous games. But it was weird. Syracuse had a lot of shots on goal, or shots against Maryland. Didn't have a lot of shots against North Carolina, but they did a better job of capitalizing on those shots. And so it was interesting. Daniela Gallette kind of kept them in it pretty much the whole game. She played really well. And then the thing that really troubled Syracuse was the draw controls in the second half. They just couldn't keep up with UNC. They tried a couple different things. UNC kept playing really well. And then once you give that offense enough time, enough possessions, like, they'll make you pay.
They certainly will, and it's going to be a shame that this team will probably be 0-3 to start the season because Stanford is just as good, maybe not better, than North Carolina. Do you see any magic in the Golden State this Friday? It's a Friday night game out east here, 8:30 Eastern time start against number two Stanford.
That's a tricky one there, because I mean, when you looked at this game a couple weeks ago, it's like, all right, they're the fifth best team in the country. That's doable. Now they're up to number two.
Yep.
Now they're up to number three, because the polls that Syracuse.com
Oh,
uses are
yes.
different. So like now,
They're
you look at
really
the
good.
three. Yes, they're really good. You look at the three teams Syracuse has played. Obviously, UNC is one inside the cross poll. Maryland started at seven, is now two,
Yeah.
and Stanford is three. So Syracuse has played the one, two, and three teams in the country. Not easy.
No.
Stanford, they're very good. They're ranked number three for a reason. It's on the road. It's going to be tough. That's about all that I'm not going to count them out, because this team has showed some fight. They show that they can keep up with the best team in the country for 30 of 60 minutes. Stanford played Clemson really, really close, beat Clemson, who's a great team. And then they played UC Davis and Vanderbilt, who aren't great competition, and destroyed them. So, can Syracuse do it? Potentially. Do I want to count them out? No. Do I want to say they're going to win? I don't think so.
It'll be interesting Friday night game, as I alluded to, and just not an easy schedule start for Reggie Thorpe's group. But I think that'll maybe pay off. The back end of the schedule, yes, there's ACC games, but it's not as daunting as this front end. And they maybe really they the team could really hit that second, third gear late in the season, which is probably the best time. That's when you want to play your best lacrosse into tournament time and into postseason play. For the women's team. And then for the men's team, they played right after that. It was a fun, electric crowd. We'll get into that with Tim here in a second. It was like 10,000 people in the dome. It felt like more. This team, Gary Gate, get over the Maryland curse. 11-9. There was no Friday the 13th, voodoo magic or anything like that. I just think it feels different this year, Griffin. Years past when these games would come around, it would be like, oh boy, here we go. Big team, Gary Gate coaching. Joey Spallina, will he get phased out? Will he not have a good game? This and that. It just feels different. This team just feels ready for every test now. And it feels like last season they needed that. They needed that Princeton win. They needed that Maryland defeat in the Final Four. Yeah, it was heartbreaking, but they needed it. And now it really feels like every test is like, oh, we've been here before. We've done things like this before. We've lost in these spots. We've won in these spots. And yes, it was a great close game. But I was never worried. It always felt as though Syracuse was in control. And with the way Joey Spallina now, the game just comes so simple to him. It feels like it's a guarantee he's going to get 4 to 5 goals each a game.
Yeah, he's playing with a confidence and a composure that I haven't seen from him outside of a select few games against bad teams. But now he's not doing it just against like the Jacksonvilles and the St. Josephs of the world. Although St. Josephs is a really good team. Don't want to disrespect them because they will probably be ranked at multiple points this season. Joey Spoelstra is playing with another level of confidence that is needed if he wants to win the Tourton, if he wants to carry a team to a national championship. You need that star player. And so when you have Joey playing at the level that he is, it only means good things for this team. Like this is going to be a team that is feared. Now, Syracuse has already been feared the past couple of years. Playing in the dome brings a new level of energy. Playing a team coached by arguably the best player and best lacrosse player of all time, that adds another thing. Syracuse is the bad boys, the mean team that everyone wants to beat. But now, when you have a leader of that group that is feared also, it adds a whole new level to it. And so it's nice to see this team playing well. The complementary pieces are being complementary. Like Wyatt Hoddle playing both sides. He's a speed demon. What, like my guy, Wyatt Hoddle, that's my guy. I called him. And then he shows up and scores two electric goals in the first half. Bo Kaan, we'll mention him a little bit. Like he's, I was like, oh, why is Bo Kaan out there? Like, let's get our top line out. No. He shuts me up. And then obviously Thompson, Roa, Leo, they're just so sound and they'll make the right plays. And obviously Mullen had this strong first half. You kind of seem like Syracuse is going to run away with it because of what Johnny Mullen was doing at the faceoff X in that first half. He was so good. He started 9 of 10. 9 of 10 against a Maryland team in a faceoff
Deprived
specialist
him
Henry
though on
Dodge.
that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then second half was rough. He went 8 straight without winning. It was not pretty in that first half or in that second half to start, and the end of that first half. But Jimmy McCool was sound, came up clutch, big saves, and Syracuse ended up playing a very sound game of lacrosse.
They certainly did. And the mentality, too, from this team, whether it's after the game and all of them basically saying, like, yeah, whatever, we're number one. That's not the goal. The goal wasn't to be, ranked number one in the inside lacrosse poll. No, the goal is the end of the year to be holding a national championship trophy. And I think the mentality is, as well, to add on to that, what you were alluding to, the game was, 11-9. It was like 7 minutes left in the game. They really had great composure. Credit to this defense, which I think is. There's an underrated side of the team. I think it is this defense with Jimmy McCool as the anchor there in net. The mentality that they had to hold Maryland to just one goal when they were pushing to try and tie this game late in the fourth quarter really shows just how much growth Gary Gates' group has had. Because in years past, Griffin, we've seen it late. Look at Harvard last year, who they got this weekend at home. They had that game in the bag, and then the Crimson came back late in that fourth quarter and won the game and stole it in overtime. It seems like situations like that won't really happen this year, or at least won't happen as often. I'm sure maybe one game they'll slip up, but based on that Maryland game, the way they closed out the game, I was ultra impressed by it.
You know that this team is going to be putting itself in the best position to win. And that's the mentality. It's win. Win games. It's not about individual stats. How can this team capitalize the best it can, win in a sound way, and position itself not to compete right now, but to compete at the end of May?
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, is can this team be competitive in the biggest games in May? Now they get on a gauntlet 6-game road trip that starts with Harvard. Without further ado, we're going to talk about that 6-game road trip. And among other things, women's basketball will hit first with the great Tim Leonard. We love talking with him. He's such a wonderful guy and always so nice to everyone here at WAER and the Ostrom Avenue podcast. We now send it over to Tim, where we talk about women's basketball and men's lacrosse. Super excited to have Tim Leonard, the voice of Syracuse women's basketball and men's lacrosse, back on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. He's a regular this time of year when it gets to crossover season. And Tim, we were just talking before we started recording how, yes, it's busy, but it's busy with good teams, especially in your case.
Yeah, my teams are not the problem. So don't come at me. I'm the play-by-play guy for two very good teams at the minute, which not that that matters a ton, but it's fun to be involved in good games and tight games. And you guys know when you're calling games down to the wire that mean a lot, it's a little bit more fun than when you're calling a 40-point blowout one way or the other. So there's been a lot of close games lately for, of course, men's lacrosse with the Maryland game and how awesome that was. And then women's basketball has had a year that sort of reminds me of 2 years ago under Coach Jack, where they're coming through with a lot of big wins and they've just had the right energy, the right vibe around the team all year. And here they sit 21-5 on the season, probably firmly inside the NCAA tournament and hoping to add to their resume. They got two good road opportunities coming up and a chance to kind of prove to some people that don't have them ranked or have them as a 9 seed that maybe they're a little bit better than that. So it has been a very exciting couple teams to cover. Obviously, lacrosse, anytime that gets going now, we know that they're going to be one of the best teams in the country, and it's good to see them back at the number one spot in the polls.
Certainly is. And you hit on that women's basketball team. That's where I want to start because I think you make a great point. It does feel like a 2 years ago team when they did make it to the tournament. Are you surprised by this? Because I'm not necessarily shocked because I knew they brought in talent. But anytime you lose, I mean, almost a good chunk of your starting lineup, good chunk of your team, you're asking a lot to have such a great season that this team is having.
Yeah, I am surprised, honestly. I
Yeah.
can't remember off the top of my head where I picked them in the ACC preseason poll, but I know it wasn't third where
Yeah.
they sit right now, kind of. And that's because they played one more game than NC State and UNC. And we'll see where they end up. Of course, a big goal over the final three games would be to get the double bye and be a top four seed, which they've done that once a couple years ago. And then the next goal would be to win an ACC tournament game. They actually haven't done that under Coach
No.
Jack. But sticking with kind of my overall thoughts on this year's team, going into the season, when I talked to the coaches, when I got a chance to see practice or just be around the team, there was a great energy that you picked up on early on in the year and going back to preseason. And the coaches were really confident. But as the broadcaster, you're always sort of like, yeah, it's preseason. They haven't played any games yet. They haven't lost anyone yet. That hasn't been tested. So we'll see. And I think the confidence this year was a little bit more in the preseason than I can remember from Coach Jack and her assistant coaches. And it's really panned out. So I don't think this is surprising them at all. And I think they probably were very surprised to see them pick 13th in the ACC, or maybe not that much surprised. They just didn't really care. And they knew that they were a lot better than that. And I think they scheduled really well in the non-con where they didn't play the toughest schedule, but they had some opportunities and they kind of picked their spots and they won all of those games that could have gone 50-50 or either way. And that's really the most impressive part about this team right now. The reason why I get the question a lot, they're 21-5, why are they not ranked? Well, they haven't beaten a ranked team yet, and they really haven't beaten anyone that is considered like in a different tier from them or would be a quote unquote upset victory. I guess you could say going on the road and beating Virginia, that's a quad one win. And that's a team that was probably favored in that game going in against Syracuse because they were at home. And beating Stanford was a nice win. But really, these are bubble teams that are their best wins. They're now 6-1 basically against bubble teams this year after taking down Clemson. So they've done a really good job of winning all the games they should and also picking off a couple that you would fall in the category of maybe they're slight underdogs. Like when they played Utah in the non-conference portion of the schedule, they were slight underdogs. They won that game. And I do think they're a really great overall team. And that's the difference from 2 years ago where it was kind of the De'Asia Fair show. And when you go back to your thoughts on the team leading into this season, we hadn't seen them be very successful without De'Asia Fair. So I think it was right to not be that optimistic, maybe, or be a little bit cautiously optimistic. I knew that they had added more talent, but I had them picked probably middle of the pack in the conference. And the conference is a little bit down this year, but Syracuse is definitely one of the biggest surprises in the league right now.
You mentioned that absence of Fair and how last season didn't go to plan. People were like, okay, it was Coach Jack kind of leaning on Fair, but obviously not the case this season. Where have you seen Coach Shaq grow, and how does she rank among the top coaches in the ACC or the country?
It's interesting talking to her about that because she's really adamant that last year she just didn't have the right attitude or learned a lot from kind of her mindset about the team last year. And obviously it was because the team started losing, but I think she learned that the team wasn't having a lot of fun last year. There wasn't a great vibe or all the things we're saying about this year's team. And she's been saying since day one about the sisterhood and the chemistry and the camaraderie of the group and how everyone's hanging out with one another off the court, and that's translating to success on the court. There wasn't enough of that last year, and I think that was because they just didn't have as much talent and they started losing games. And when you lose games, people start thinking about how can I transfer out and all that in today's age of college basketball. So I think Coach Jack sort of refocused this offseason, and that was kind of a wake-up call in a way to her to know that she has to get the right type of players, the right character, people that are bought in. She clearly went out. They wanted to get more size and more athleticism in the portal, and they did that. And obviously, Uche Azoje is the hallmark of that and an amazing find by the coaching staff to get her. And I think that's the biggest thing that maybe we in Syracuse knew that she was going to be really good because Coach Jack said that from day one, and she was heaping praise on her from the start of the season. But if you're an average ACC preseason poll voter or an ACC media member, you don't really know what she's all about. You just see a freshman who has no rankings next to her name. Now we know that she's probably the best freshman in the conference and one of the best bigs, period, in the conference as a freshman. And part of that is because she's not a typical freshman. She's 21 years old and played professionally in Japan for a couple years. So I think that is why they were viewed as the 13th team when maybe if we knew that, they would have gotten more respect in the polls. But Coach Jack definitely has said, and even going back to their worst loss of the year was Virginia Tech, she has been adamant about she didn't come with the right energy or attitude to that game. And she made a promise to the team that she would not do that the rest of the season. So she's not very specific on what exactly the attitude adjustment is. But clearly, she has found something internally that she's acting a little bit differently. She says she has hinted at that she wants to be a little bit more neutral at times during games and make sure that she's not giving off too much negative energy, too much positive energy. So I think things like that she's picked up on. And then they just did a much better job of getting a roster in here that can compete in the ACC and is balanced and very deep.
Well, she certainly gives off. I don't know if she's changed that. The energy there from
Right.
Coach Shaq is
Yeah.
still about the
Her
same.
changing it is one thing. For us, it'd be completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's, I think, I mean, at least that's what I love. And I think
Yeah.
that's what makes her so unique and one of the better coaches in the ACC and maybe the country. So 3 games left for this team, NC State, Notre Dame, Boston College. Obviously, you want to win all 3 of these games. Is there something you're looking for, especially, I mean, Boston College, I don't want to, mean this harshly, but a glorified, exhibition or preseason game at this point with how poor they are. Is there something you're looking for, like, this team could tweak or really needs to work on before the ACC tournament, which is a tournament that, you can speak this for the men and women. Nobody for Syracuse likes to play in that tournament for some reason.
Yeah, we got a new location this year. It's in Duluth, Georgia, which is very bizarre. So maybe that will
No
spur some better
Greensboro.
basketball from women's basketball. We're so used to going down to Greensboro for that. And like I said, hopefully they secure a double bye and they're in a better spot, although that wouldn't improve your chances really of winning the first game because you're probably playing someone that's coming off a win with some momentum. But I think the team's biggest weakness is the offense at times against really good defenses, or if you are taking Uche Azoje out of the game, do they have enough shooting overall to beat a Duke, a Louisville, we're talking top teams in the country. So the thing that I always remind people about women's basketball is there's more levels to it than I'd say men's basketball. I mean, you're talking about BC, and it's an unfortunate situation there. That's an example of, by all reports, they have $0 to give to their roster and they can't keep up. I mean, they had a pretty good team last year, middle of the
Beat
pack
Syracuse.
ACC. Yeah, they beat the Orange twice. They crushed them at Conti Forum. And if you look at their roster, Tiana Todd, I think, is at Ohio State. Taya Sidbury went to Texas. So a lot of their best players just left, and they had no money to keep them. And they're the smallest team I've ever seen in Power Conference. So you're right. That's just going to be a win. And in men's college basketball, you don't have that where you're playing a conference team and it's just a win. Like Pittsburgh this year on the road, you just knew they were going to win by 30. BC on the road, you knew they were going to win by 30. And some of that is Syracuse is good. So it's not just a complete rollover for everyone, but that's how it is. And then when you're talking about the top 10 versus the top 20 in women's basketball, I mean, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, South Carolina beat Tennessee by 42 points. And Tennessee was 19 in the country, and South Carolina was number three. And UConn's rolling over teams, and it's been that way, of course, for years under Geno. So there has been more parity of late, and there's more upsets, and I think that's good for the game. But in general, if Syracuse could get off of the 8-9 line, that really increases their chances of winning a game because honestly, you're fearful if you're on that 8-9 line that you're just going to get that bus trip to Stores, and that's what the committee has done in the past. And if they're playing UConn, Syracuse is a great team this year, but I mean, I don't think they have a chance of winning that game, unfortunately. It's not like when we're talking about the team 2 years ago when they were right there with UConn. UConn was a three seed that year, Syracuse was a six. Now, that's a good example, though. If Syracuse gets to the six line and they're playing a three seed, yes, you got to play them on the road if you win your first game and they win, but that's a game that they could maybe win. And in order to win those type of games, they need to get more out of their offense when they're struggling to get inside and when they're struggling to get turnovers, which leads to fast break offense. So more out of the half court sets. You need a really good game from Dominique Darius and Layla Filia together, probably, to beat a top 15, top 20 team in the country. And to get to the Sweet 16, I think it will come down to, can their guards make threes? Can they hit jump shots a little bit more?
Charlie Cream of ESPN's Bracketology always seems to have Syracuse playing UConn, and just like, that would be an easy bus ride and probably an easy bus ride back. Maybe not a fun one, but let's switch over to lacrosse. Syracuse big win over Maryland, the first since 2009. What was the atmosphere like? How was the dome crowd? And could you tell from the players and from the crowd that this was probably the biggest game in the dome in a while?
Yeah, that was an amazing crowd. I was just blown away. I remember looking up during the game and the amount of fans on the wings of the upper bowl. They announced 10,000, and I always say this with lacrosse, it always feels like it's more than that. And it's just an amazing environment when you get that many people in there for a lacrosse game. And the thing about the Syracuse crowd, too, is obviously they come out in droves compared to everyone else. That goes without being said that you're not getting anywhere close to 10,000 any other spot in the country. But they're also knowledgeable, too. And there's little plays in the game like an offsides or stuff that happens that's really deep in the rule book that people might not understand if you're just at a typical college lacrosse game. But when you're in Syracuse, the fans all get that. So it's an amazing atmosphere to be a part of when Syracuse lacrosse is humming like it is right now. And I mean, going to the games, I'm sure, is a blast for all the fans right now as well. And I did sense that the team knew it was a bigger game than normal. But I think they're so grounded in the idea of let's win the day, let's win the next game. And their schedule is so tough that they really can't get that excited about Maryland because, I mean, they got Princeton down the road. They got Harvard this week, who was locked in a dogfight with them and beat them last year in the dome. And then, they had to come back miraculously to beat them in the NCAA tournament first round. So all these games are tough for them, and they're going to lose some games, and they're going to be some lumps just because of how tough the schedule is. But that's what Gary Gate wants. That's why he took this job, is to get 10,000 in the dome again. To take down Maryland is obviously meaningful for him, I'm sure, and meaningful for the guys given the series history. But they really just want to challenge themselves early on in the year, and they want to be better prepared for when they get to that stage, hopefully again in the Final Four. And who knows, they'll probably play Maryland again en route to the Final Four or in the Final Four, hopefully they're a little bit more equipped this time around.
So yeah, and you mentioned the crowd and how informed and great they are. Now it's a shame though that they won't get to see a
I know.
lacrosse game until the end of March because of the 6-game road trip. Of course, now there's Philadelphia isn't far, Princeton. There's some road trips in there. They got Harvard this weekend, who just rolled over Colgate last night. A rare midweek game for Harvard and just lacrosse in general. Do you like the decision to roll with this road trip early on from Gary Gate? And can this team afford to slip up a game or two? Because I you feel like it's inevitable where you're just gonna have a tough road game, a tough road atmosphere, on a 6-game road trip.
Yeah, if they come out of this 6-game road trip still undefeated, I would be very, very impressed. Just because, I mean, they should. I guess really the games that you're worried about are Harvard and Princeton, which are the next two. After that, they should beat Denver. They should beat Air Force. I think in that category is more like if you just don't have an injury or something, or if you're kind of still what we know Syracuse to be right now, you should be able to win those games, but you still got to go out and there's no easy wins in this stretch, especially when you consider they're all on the road. I don't think from talking to Gary that he lined it up like, hey, we're going to play three at home, then we're going to play six on the road, then we're going to go back to home. It just kind of fell this way. And I think what's underrated is he really deals with a lot of dome, like the dome scheduling itself is very tough to get. So the schedule's never going to be perfect in his eyes. I mean, he would love to play in the dome more, but they have Monster Jam one weekend. They have basketball going on. Women's lacrosse is in the dome. And then, women's basketball in theory could have been hosting that weekend that they host Georgetown. I don't think it's going to work out that way, but say they go win the ACC tournament or they win out or go on a big run here, then you have to change things. So there's been years where people are like, why are we playing Duke on a weekday? Or why are, and it's just the dome. I don't think that's Gary's hands are kind of tied there. So the schedule worked out the way it did this year. He is all for playing as many games as possible. They literally have no bye weeks. And I like that. I mean, it might be a little on the overdoing it side of things compared to like, but I definitely like it more than what Notre Dame does or what some of these other schools do. Not to just call out Notre Dame by name, but they play 10, 11 games every year, right around the minimum. And they're making sure that they have a bye week built in. And I get it's just a different mindset, but Gary goes back to his days as a player and he just wanted to play, and he doesn't understand. Like, he's made the public comments, and you were kind of hinting at it there with the midweek game for Colgate. He wants to see more of that. So, the way he schedules, I think, is very admirable that they just will play anyone, anywhere, anytime, on any day's rest. And I think it's paid off for them. I mean, they played in a lot of big games. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that this team was considered like they couldn't execute in big games. Now we see them against Maryland. And they just look like they belong. They look like the physical team that can win the ground balls, that can make the right plays. And sure, they had a turnover or two that was sloppy, and Maryland actually made more mistakes than I thought in the fourth quarter. But it's early in the season, too, for this year's group. And I think that whole narrative of can they execute in big games, that's so far removed from how we view the team now, and that's so much because they've just put themselves in a lot of big games, and that's a testament to how they schedule.
Obviously, this season has been a step up for Joey Spoelstra. We were wondering how he would respond after that Final Four game. He had a great game against Princeton in the quarterfinals, but this season has really been it's Joey's team. It's clear he's making the calls out there. He's being a leader, and his play on the field has elevated immensely. What has impressed you about him so far, and how do you think his leadership on the field has kind of taken a step up?
Yeah, his shooting has been incredible this year. I can't remember him shooting this well. It's only been three games, but literally any chance he gets to score, it feels like he's scoring right now. And that was the big takeaway for me from the Maryland game is he's so smart, he's so good off ball, he's got such great lacrosse IQ that any chance he got to dodge against someone that wasn't Will Shaller, the best defender in the country probably, he got the ball and he took advantage of that opportunity. And if you go through, I mean, he scored four goals. None of them were against the number two player in the country, according to Inside Lacrosse. And that was kind of the case when he beat Sean Light, and or I guess didn't even really beat Sean Light, but beat Notre Dame last year in the regular season and had a big game. So it was interesting hearing him talk about, I watch back CJ Kearse and I can't dodge like him, but CJ Kearse got so many opportunities in the championship game last year away from Schaller. And I think Joey is so smart in maximizing what he has. I mean, we get into this conversation a lot, and in a way, Joey is like underrated and overrated. I think he's underrated from a national lens of just how good he is, and there's some detractors and haters, and he pointed those out after he dropped 9 points on Princeton last year in the quarterfinals. And in a way, I feel like I'm defending him or trying to tell people, no, he is really that good, and his stats mean something, and we're not paying attention to how good he is. Then in another way, he's the number one player this year in the country, Tour Ton favorite, and he's not the guy that Syracuse would probably throw the ball to with 10 on the shot clock or coming out of a timeout with 10 seconds left in the game. They'd probably give it to Michael Leo, I'd say, this year to dodge, or Peyton Anderson maybe down the road is their best dodger. So that part is so contrary to what we have in our head of a number 22 or the best player, one of the best players in Syracuse history. And I talked to former players and people that have been around the program forever, and they would never consider him a Mount Rushmore type of player just because of that fact. He's not the guy maybe that is going to break you down off the dodge. But we got to give him credit for what he's doing game in and game out, and his ability to constantly put up points, and his ability to draw the top defender every single game, find ways to get around him, found ways to outsmart the team, and how he's grown as a leader, like you guys talked about. So in his senior year, he is a much better player than he was, obviously, as a freshman or a sophomore. And I was sort of wondering when he was a freshman or a sophomore, how much better could Joey get? What's that next step he could take? Because he's not some elite athlete. And it's hard to visualize, like, could his ceiling raise even more? Because he came in as a freshman and he was already so smart. So some of the traits that it's not like he's some super talented guy that just needed to, like, learn lacrosse more or learn the ins and outs of the game more. That was already so advanced that you wondered, would he be drastically better as a senior than he was as a freshman or sophomore? And I think he is, because he's just like on another level shooting wise. His lacrosse IQ is still elite, but he's making sure that he's in the right matchup and taking advantage of the right moments and not forcing it at all. So obviously, I've been very impressed with him, and he'll forever be a puzzling player to figure out where he fits in the Mount Rushmore or the all-time great conversation at Syracuse.
Yeah, well, he's getting to that all-time points record, so I think
Yeah.
that'll help some some lunch table debates maybe there. And everybody wants to talk about the senior class, rightfully so. It is the class; they are very talented. But there's some other guys on this team that are making impacts that don't have that senior title. I think of a player like Jake Spleena, I've been really impressed with. Bo Khan as well. Is there someone that isn't a senior that you've really liked through three games so far?
Yeah, I would second Bo Khan. He's been awesome. He really fits the bill of what they've been kind of missing, which is just a physical presence and someone that can help you on the wings. He can play some defense. He's very versatile. You think about Sam English and Jake Stevens going back a couple years, were kind of those type of guys. And Bo Khan's only a freshman, but he's the guy that scored the fourth quarter goal against Maryland, which had to be really cool for him growing up in that area. And I'm sure he could have played for Maryland and was a top 20 recruit and decided to go to Syracuse. So I think they've gotten a little bit more of a physical edge to the team over the last handful of years now. I mean, it was not that long ago that we would always look down at the ground ball stat and say that's the reason they lost games, or they can't play that style that championship teams play, where it's a physical, wear you down style, slow the game down. They have to be up tempo. They have to be finesse. And now Syracuse has 22 and 23 year olds that have been in the weight room for 3, 4 years, and they're winning the ground balls. And that was maybe the most encouraging thing about Maryland is it wasn't like they beat Maryland and Maryland had to play a completely different style of game. I mean, Maryland beats a lot of teams 11-9, and it was Syracuse beating them and Syracuse slowing down the game at times, and that was fine for them to play that way. It reminded me a little bit of the way they won the ACC championship game last year against Duke, where they could take their foot off the gas pedal a little bit and scale it back and still win a low scoring game. So they didn't have that gear maybe 2, 3 years ago, and that's just because now these guys are older, and I think getting guys like Bo Kahn and Jaden Kittleberger that just have a little bit more size has really helped them.
Riley Figueres is a guy that the past couple of years I think deserved national attention and didn't get as much as a Billy Dwan. But I've been really impressed. It's been Figueres that oftentimes takes that number one assignment. And so far through three games, he's been spectacular. What have you seen about Riley and the overall defensive unit that has impressed you?
Yeah, so well said. I mean, I'm at the top of the list of the Riley Figueres' most underrated player in the country. I mean, every year I feel like the All-American list comes out at the end of the year and before the season, and I'm just scratching my head why more people aren't realizing that he's the top defender on the team. And you said oftentimes he takes that number one assignment. I think pretty much every time at this point he's on that number one guy. Now, sure, in a scenario like Maryland, where they've got a physical guy in Spanos and then they've got the more quick guy in Leo Johnson, it's just obvious that he's going to be on Leo Johnson. And you get into a debate on who is actually truly the number one there. So they match him up based on who's the speedster, kind of, and Billy Juwan's the more physical defender. But if it is, you know, two even guys in terms of skill set and one is better than the other, Riley's going to see that matchup. And Riley is so impressive from a standpoint of he just doesn't make mistakes. You don't call his name out. You don't mention his name a lot during the broadcast. He's not going to score goals. He's not going to throw it in from 60 yards out like Billy Juwan against a 10-man ride. He literally hasn't scored a goal in his career. He's not going to have an assist. He's not going to be in transition. He won't be scooping up as many ground balls or making a highlight reel play, but he's just so fundamentally sound. And he's another one that, like Joey Spallina, doesn't wow you athletically, but his lacrosse IQ and just being in the right spot and watching film and reading his matchup and his mindset. I mean, he's just such a nonchalant guy that shows up and just locks up the number one player on the other team consistently. So to me, he's a first team All-American defender. And I've talked with some of the Syracuse coaches about this, and they agree that I think Carter Rice and him were the two most underrated guys for what Syracuse was last year. And this year, they don't have Carter Rice, but Riley has gotten even better. And you just look at the first three games, and it's not like he's going up against, you know, scrubs. I mean, the first two games of the year, BU and St. Joe's had a returning sophomore that was right up there nationally in goals, and they don't score at all hardly against Riley. And then Leo Johnson got one early, and Riley pretty much locked him up the rest of the game. So he deserves a lot more credit, honestly.
All right. Well, thanks, Tim, so much for taking the time. I'm not sure if I know this for a fact, but you know, watching the Super Bowl and then the Olympics, NBC's calling this February like their Championship February. Maybe we have to start calling Tim Leonard Championship Tim because he's gonna be calling so many championships. Hopefully, for Syracuse women's
Hopefully.
basketball and men's lacrosse. We'll be listening, Tim. Great work as always with those things, and a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, guys, thanks so much. Always happy to come back on and keep up the good work on your guys' end.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tim. Huge thank you to Tim Leonard again for taking the time to join us on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Great insight, as always. He's got so much to say on this women's basketball team, which if you haven't paid attention to yet, you know, hop on it now because they're really good, and it could be a fun March for Coach Jack's team. And then men's lacrosse, which the fun is really just starting. And I think he had a lot of great thoughts on the 6-game road trip and why Gary Gay constructed that and with the dome conflict. So all really good things to remember maybe in 3 weeks when this team is struggling on the road and you're, you know, screaming and yelling while you're listening to 88.3 of, well, why are they going on a 6-game road trip? Well, maybe it was out of Gary Gates' hands. So great insight there. And speaking of listening to WAER, that's what everyone should do Saturday starting at 12:30, because there's two broadcasts. One is on 88.3 and one is on HD2. Best way to find that, just go to WAR.org, hit the listen button, and then if you hit it again or twice, there's another option to listen to the HD2 broadcast, because that's where you listen to men's lacrosse against Harvard. That faceoff is at 1. McClure Remodeling countdown to faceoff, 12:30. And then after that, or rather on WAR 88.3, you can listen to Syracuse men's basketball taking on number 16, North Carolina. They just got blown out by NC State. They were a banged up UNC team. Maybe Adrian Autry can cook up one more upset in the dome. Quickly, Griffin, if they do upset them, do the fans storm the court?
Oof. I mean, yeah, no.
What? No way. You can't storm a court. It's awful this season, right?
I don't think they should. Will they? Yes, I think they will.
That would be something. It would really change the narrative of this season if Adrian Autry
I don't think it
gets
will.
gets fired with two court stormings. That would be interesting. Tennessee and then UNC. You got to beat them first. And against Duke, they were 20.5-point underdogs. One of the largest, you know, point spreads against them in some time for Syracuse. So that gets going at 1 o'clock on 88.3 WAR, WAR.org, the place to listen for that as well. And then the double overtime, it's going to be a sandwich of both the basketball and lacrosse. So call in about whatever you want to talk about, really, basketball or lacrosse. That is on the air until 5 p.m. So a loaded Saturday of basketball and lacrosse. It's what you love about, you know, crossover season and all the good things that come with that. And the best thing that comes with crossover season is that the Ostrom Avenue podcast is the best spot to listen for recaps, for insight. We're going to have more fun interviews ahead, mainly on the lacrosse front, as that season's really starting to turn out. And it looks like it'll be a fun season to talk about and a fun season to get guests as well. So stick with the Ostrom Avenue podcast the rest of the way for basketball and into lacrosse season, wherever you get your podcast or at WAR.org. Got the full episode library there. A lot of fun stuff. You can listen back. Brent Axe was a great interview with men's basketball. And again, we're going to start really hitting on those lacrosse interviews and getting some even better lacrosse insight. And a big thank you to Tim Leonard for everything that he did with us before we started recording today, and a great interview there as well. That'll do it for this episode. We'll be back next week recapping everything in crossover season, men's, women's, sports, everything that's happening on the Hill. Ostrom Avenue Podcast is the place to go. Thanks, everybody, for listening.